Texas, America, the world. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'd like to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Dancos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience through conventional radio in the American South. We're joined today by Kevin Barrett. I'm sure that most of you know Dr. Kevin Barrett or know who he is. He represents the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. You can find that website at mujca.com. That's mujca.com. And Kevin is no stranger, of course, to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can hear him on this network, and I'll let him say more about that at a future juncture in the next 2 hours. But if you take a look at mujca.com, the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth, you'll discover a statement as to who and what the organization is, and what its understanding is of the future in regard to political activism on a whole host of subjects that relate to things that are definitely of great import to you and to me in the days ahead. And I would like to introduce Dr. Kevin J. Barrett, who is the co-founder of the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing okay. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. Listen, in terms of your organization, just to bring all of our listeners up to speed, how did it get started, and what do you see as the most important fronts that you're fighting on at this particular point in time?
Well, it got started about two and a half, three years ago. I guess only two and a half, yeah, back in November 2005. And that was after I'd done about a year of 9/11 truth activism. After in late 2003, I discovered that there was overwhelming evidence that 9/11 was an inside job. And you know, once I figured that out, I realized I had to do something about it. And it was later on that year, and towards the end of 2004, that I thought that, hey, you know, why don't we try bringing together Christians and Jews and Muslims on this thing? Because if you really think about it, this was calculated to sow hatred and violence between people of faith of these different traditions. And maybe people of faith need to sit down and talk about how this all got started in order to find a way to put an end to this violence. So I think that's the main mission, is to stop this World War IV before it starts, by getting people of faith together to talk about it.
Well, you know, there was a story today, Kevin. I just came across it within the last 20 minutes or so, and it's put out by something called The Spoof. I've never seen it before, thespoof.com, and they emphasize that this is a piece of what they call satire. But it says, Vice President Cheney thanks AIPAC for staging 9/11 funny satire story. And then as you read through this thing, which is a fictitious byline from Reuters in Washington, it really attempts to caricature those of us who believe either that 9/11 was an inside job, or that at a bare minimum it was used by the Project for a New American Century crowd to justify an intervention in the Middle East that had nothing really to do with Al-Qaeda, nothing to do with a real war on terror, but that it involved a war for Israel and for oil and natural gas pipelines. Do you think this sort of thing, and I know you haven't seen the piece in all likelihood, but it struck me that this attempt to cast this viewpoint in terms of satire would be a pretty good way of delegitimizing those of us who think that there's a lot more to this story than has been told up to this point. We'll take that up with Kevin Barrett when we come back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on RBN. Stay tuned.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long-life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush-proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420. And see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420. Or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kevin Barrett of the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. You can find that website at mujca.com. That's mujca.com. Kevin, talking about this whole thing before the break, where this outfit called the Spoof.com has a satire or parody. Self-described satire or parody that is entirely fictitious and that involves so-called comedy spoof news writing. Somebody has a post there entitled, Vice President Cheney Thanks AIPAC for Staging 9/11, Funny Satire Story. Do you think this is a backhanded way potentially of trying to put those of us who think there was more to 9/11 than what the government said there was, In a light where we are to be parodied as comedic sources and not to be taken seriously as political thinkers of any consequence?
The thing is, it's not going to work very well. For one thing, when you write a satire and you put a big headline up there at the top saying, funny satire story, that's a clue
yes.
that you think your audience is a bunch of morons. And that's exactly what the people that did 9/11 think about Americans. They're the neoconservatives, and their philosophy is that they're brilliant and smart enough to deal with reality the way it is. Everybody else has to be led around by the nose with big lies. So when they put a funny satire story up there like this, sure, they're trying to go after us and mock us and so on, because that's all the other side ever does in this 9/11 debate, because they don't have any serious arguments. They have no evidence. They have no arguments. So all they do is try and call us names. But the problem is it isn't going to work for them, because they've waited too long, and by now the polls show that 36% of the American people, that's over 100 million Americans, say that 9/11 was an inside job. And only 16% believe the government is telling the truth. So given that, they're desperately trying to go for that sort of middle, 50% of the American people who are, know the government's lying, but they just don't quite know what to believe about what really happened. And I think they're doing it pretty lamely if they're putting up these dumb satire stories that have to be labeled as a duh, funny satire story at the top.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And, to me, as I look at this whole thing, and I've said it before on this show, one can go back certainly to just a couple of examples in American history in the last 65 years where something has happened of grave import that was given a particular spin by the government and by corporate media, only to discover as the years went on that there was a responsible case to be made for the fact that things were not as they were advertised at the time. I'm thinking specifically of the Pearl Harbor thing and also the Kennedy assassination. Are we looking at that same sort of scenario when it comes to 9/11?
I think we are. Mark, I think actually to get a clue as to what's going on with 9/11 and the forces behind it, I think you could really no better than to take a look at Pearl Harbor and especially the JFK assassination. In both cases, the behind-the-scenes leadership decided that the people just couldn't be trusted. With Pearl Harbor, 80% of the American people wanted to stay out of World War II, and yet Roosevelt and his British banker brain trust figured that the people were wrong, and to heck with them, we're going to force them into war by brainwashing them, and that's what they did by slapping that oil embargo on Japan, basically forcing Japan to attack just for it to stay alive. And then they broke the codes and knew exactly where it was coming, and they moved the aircraft carriers out of the way because we needed those, and left 2,000-plus sailors to die as a sacrifice to the gods of war. And likewise, with the JFK assassination, again, these powers that be, and again, I think the British banker brain trust is certainly at the heart of the group behind this. They decided that that JFK couldn't be trusted. He was going to do a number of things that they didn't like, including the government printing its own money, which is a threat, of course, to the Federal Reserve, which is a private banking cartel that prints all of our currency. And he was also going to call off the Vietnam War, which these guys were just set to rev up and make a lot of money on, among other things. He was also going to shut down the Israeli nuclear program. So for all of those reasons, I think they took him out because they just didn't trust the American people to vote people into office and pursue policies, that the people could live with. And once again, with 9/11, I don't think they trusted the American people to go to war for Israel and oil in the Middle East. If they told us the truth, we wouldn't do it. So they had to create this big lie, and they murdered 3,000 Americans in the World Trade Center, just blew it up live on camera, and they screwed up, left a lot of evidence out there, so much evidence that I don't think any rational person, after looking into it, can deny it. And I think we need to pick up that evidence and expose these people before they do this kind of thing again.
Well, this was your last statement is in anticipation, I think, of what my next question was going to be. With all of the things that are being floated about in the press, both in this country now to some extent as well as internationally, that talk about the possibility, some would say the likelihood, that there will be an American attack, preemptive military attack on Iran in the next year. With all of that talk that is being bandied about at the same time that the polls show an ever-decreasing set of numbers when it comes not only to the popularity of Bush and Cheney, but when it comes to the whole issue of the war in Iraq as presently constituted, what kinds of false flag incidents could we be talking about here as a prelude toward revving up public support for an expansion of the military operation?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it, Mark?
Yes.
And I can't say I have the answer. It does seem to me that it would be pretty tough for these guys to get away with another 9/11-style event after, you know, more than a third of the American people, that's 100 million people, understand the first one. On the other hand, if they don't do something like that, then they're going to get nailed as war criminals down the line. So they're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and that makes them even more dangerous than they already were. So, you know, we could get anything like an attack on an American ship in the Persian Gulf. That's pretty likely. And I suppose we could also see some kind of a horrific 9/11-style event in the homeland, which they could try to use to shut down the Internet and round up dissidents, put them in concentration camps. I hope they're not going to go that far. I'm sure that, you know, some of them would, but hopefully there are people in power who are not ready to turn the U.S. into an out-and-out, you know, Soviet-style gulag or, you know, Nazi-style concentration camp. Even though we know there are some who are certainly ready to do that. So I think we just have to be alert and aware and ready to go into action the second something like this happens. We have to be out there with signs, you know, saying it was false flag, and try and get the top military folks to honor their oath to the Constitution and arrest the perpetrators of the false flag event and try them for war crimes.
In terms of you're still at UW-Madison?
Well, yes and no.
Yeah, that's why I asked, because I saw this on your website. My oldest niece went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison and graduated from there a number of years ago, then got her law degree at the University of Texas and is now serving as an attorney out of the West Coast. But as far as what this has cost you personally, Dr. Barrett, in standing up for what you believe to be true in regard to 9/11, I suspect that it has resulted in a number of very complicated personal and professional development sense, and to the extent that you can talk about this on the air, I'd like for you to share with us what it's like being a political dissident of a responsible stripe, trying to speak out when there are powerful forces at work out there that are trying to impact your life negatively.
Well, you know, Mark, it's not all that complicated. It's just that I don't really know what my employment status will be in the future, because I'm on this semester-by-semester contract. Since I got my PhD a few years ago, I elected to stay here in Wisconsin rather than go off and chase the career trail. And the reason I did that was, well, I turned down a postdoc at the University of California because it was funded by Ford Foundation, which is complicit in funding 9/11 cover-up artists like Chip Berlay at Political Research Associates.
Yes, and, I've heard of him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He was... Now, used to ambush David Griffin, the 9/11 truth teller, on Democracy Now a few years ago, and that angered me enough that I just said I don't want their dirty money, and I turned down that postdoc. So I've been in Wisconsin ever since, taking these semester-by-semester teaching jobs. That means I have to apply when the job opening appears, and if I'm the best person for the job, theoretically, I get hired. Now, I haven't yet applied for next fall. I was allowed to teach last fall, even though they tried to get me fired. This lunatic legislator named Steve Nass, N-A-S-S, I call him the man with one N too many, he's been going after me, you know, starting in, you know, beginning of July, every 2 weeks like clockwork, boom, you know, he'd issue some new call, he'd call a press conference and come up with some new reason why I had to be fired. But it didn't work, and so I finished the semester and got very high ratings from my students, and everything's cool there. So the question is, what's going to happen next fall? And that really depends on what I apply for. And it'll be interesting to see whether, assuming I can find a class I'm qualified to teach, which I think I probably can, whether I'll get hired there or not. It's still up in the air.
Well, that's very interesting, and it gets back to a real fundamental question, and that is the extent to which responsible political dissidents in this country can find themselves being ostracized both by the American educational establishment as well as by the American news media. In your particular case, have you found that as far as the classroom is concerned, that most of the, and I use the word kids advisedly, I guess I'm now old enough that I can speak of college-age students as kids, do you find that the kids in the main are receptive toward the idea that they have to examine the data on these questions and to come up with their own conclusions as to what is and isn't the truth?
Oh, sure. They're actually in a better position to try to figure out what's going on than we older folks are because, you know, once you've passed a certain point in life, you know, if you haven't figured it out, the chances that you're going to figure it out, you know, start to go down a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean it's hopeless. You know, I'm sure there are people who can wake up to things that they, you know, would never have believed even in their ripe old age. But the thing is, these 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds that are going to school at the University of Wisconsin, you know, they're fairly bright. They're selected for people who are good students and so on, and they're open-minded and they're lively. You know, I've found that the young people today are, even though they're not out in the streets protesting the things they should be, their minds are pretty good. So, my experience has been that, you know, students are quite capable of examining different points of view and looking at different arguments and evaluating them. Doesn't mean that they're always going to be right. Doesn't mean they're going to evaluate them that much better than any other person would. But I think we just have to accept that in a free society, college students should be exposed to a broad range of interpretations of important historical events. That's what I did in my class. I didn't try and brainwash them or just, you know, tell them what I thought. I just put out there what are the most important interpretations of the War on Terror, and that was only 1 week of a 16-week Islam class. And, of course, my university administration thought that was a perfectly good way to teach an Islam class, which is why they resisted the pressure to fire me.
Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Islam. I know Dr. Michael Chasanovsky over at globalresearch.ca wrote an article a while ago entitled "The Demonization of Muslims," and that article about the demonization of Muslims was in turn tied to the notion that this demonization needed to occur so that the American and British political elites could have a justifiable context for the general public in regard to an imperial quest for oil and natural gas resources. To what extent do you think this demonization is going on in the Western media and in the Western educational circles? What impact do you think it's having on the American perception of what the Muslim religion is? And who do you think is behind this demonization?
Well, those are important questions. And yes, I think there is a demonization of Muslims going on, and there has been, even before 9/11. It's been really revving up for quite some time. I think since the 1967 war, in which Israel seized Jerusalem and a lot of other territories of its surrounding countries, thereby creating even a lot more enmity than it had even faced before. Since that time, there's been a move towards more and more of this demonization of Arabs and Muslims. You see it in Hollywood films where the villains, you know, are often cast as these evil Arab Muslim terrorists. And so it's been going on for a long time. But, you know, with 9/11, it really reached this new level that I find unacceptable. Because clearly, you know, the story that we've been given that there were these extremist Muslims that did 9/11 is preposterous. And you don't even have to accept it was an inside job to figure this out. All you have to do is look at these alleged 19 hijackers. And you don't even have to, you know, forget the fact that 10 of these 19 guys are still alive, and forget the fact that one of them was dead a year before 9/11. Even if we were to imagine that these 19 guys were guilty of what, you know, they're accused of, still, they're not Muslims. These 19 guys were party-hardy James Bond types, you know, running around snorting cocaine and drinking top-shelf whiskey, flashing wads of $100 bills, flying to Vegas to party, doing important business and pleasure meetings on Abramoff casino boats, and pretending to learn to fly at CIA drug import airstrips, where that's where they were getting their cocaine. So they were, you know, Muslims, of course. If they're religious Muslims, they're very, you know, they don't drink, much less do drugs. Sex outside of marriage is a pretty major no-no. And these guys, the so-called 19 hijackers, were, you know, patronizing prostitutes and lap dancers left and right. So just looking at the lifestyle of these alleged 19 hijackers during the run-up to 9/11, any rational person reading this stuff in, like, the Wall Street Journal, it's been, you know, all out in the major media, could say, look, this whole story that extremist Muslims had something to do with 9/11 is a crock. But for some reason, the mainstream media won't, you know, they'll publish once, you know, a story about what these guys were doing before 9/11, and then they drop it, and they continue to pump us up with this anti-Muslim propaganda. And I'm really sick of it. It really reminds me of what the Nazis were doing with Jews prior to the Second World War in Germany. And I think it's unacceptable, and we need to denounce it. And basically, I think everybody doing it, the people in the media who are, you know, guilty of publishing these stories, they're going to have to be tried for war crimes and hanged as war criminals.
What do you think, Dr. Barrett, happened that day in regard to just the logistics of creating what happened on 9/11? What's your best reconstruction of the event in terms of what role these 19 did or did not play in this whole process? What brought down those towers and so forth? What is your best current constructed scenario as to what did happen?
Well, starting with means, motive, and opportunity, to suggest that there would be these radical Muslims whose goal is to get the U.S. and Israel out of territories that we're invading and occupying, who would be smart enough to pull this off, yet stupid enough to think that doing something like 9/11 would help their cause, doesn't make any sense. So that's a good place to start. Then let's look at what we actually know. We now know for a fact that those three World Trade Center buildings, the two towers and Building 7 especially, were brought down by controlled demolitions with explosives. Now, Building 7 was a high-security building. It was the CIA's second biggest headquarters in the U.S. outside of Langley, Virginia, and it had Secret Service, it had a Securities and Exchange Commission with all their records on Enron, and a whole lot of other top security stuff. Now, the idea that Muslim terrorists who, you know, these guys were just party-hardy goofballs, you know, people like that could somehow, you know, sneak into Building 7 and carry out a controlled demolition of this building, which was just massive, you know, had massive steel structural architecture. You know, it required extremely sophisticated demolition crews to do that. And the idea that these terrorists did that is just ludicrous. It's obviously an inside job. So we know that insiders, presumably linked to, you know, U.S., British intelligence, you know, military circles, went in there and rigged up these buildings with explosives and took them down in order to blame Muslims. That much we know. The question is, were there really any Muslim hijackers? And if you think about it, could you really trust some, you know, party-hardy pseudo-Muslim on the CIA payroll, which is what these guys were, to fly planes into buildings when you needed to make sure that there would be a plane impact to blame the demolition on, you know, and to act as a distraction so people would think that it came down because it was hit by a plane? Of course you wouldn't. There's no human being that you could trust to do something like that. So obviously these planes were flown by remote control so that they would have a near 100% chance of success at hitting their targets. And given that, I think the most likely hypothesis is that there was absolutely no role whatsoever of genuine radical Muslims, besides perhaps at some level, a couple of really, you know, stupid or greedy or naive young people being used as patsies by the intelligence services that did this. So, in short, 9/11 was a complete inside job.
Yes, and given the given your take on this whole thing, again, it begs the larger question, doesn't it, as to what the future may hold if, in fact, the Project for a New American Century crowd had something to do with this situation in regard to both Israel and oil, which are the two chief things that always seem to come up when one looks at the role of the corporate American structure in this whole process. If, in fact, attacking Iran is a part of that whole scenario, you know, it seems once again to come full circle to this whole question of what kind of event could be just around the corner to basically justify the kinds of military operations that seem to be in the process of occurring. I know Pat Buchanan, among others, has made a lot of the fact that we have this Navy admiral who was the commander-in-chief of our forces in the Pacific, or SINCPAC, General or Admiral William Fallon, suddenly taking over at CENTCOM We've got three major American aircraft carrier task force groups deployed to the Persian Gulf. A lot of activities in the Middle East as well that suggest that something is afoot. We'll be back with Dr. Kevin Barrett. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on RBN. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Many Bible prophecies written thousands of years ago have been fulfilled in the past 100 years. Unknown by most people, even Bible-reading Christians, major end-time prophecies are being fulfilled today, including the one-world government, the one-world religion, the 10-nation confederacy of Daniel and Revelation, the mark of the beast, or 666. Speculation abounds about these ancient prophecies and what they might mean today. Now, one of the most foremost scholars on geopolitics, Dr. Michael Kaufman, who has stopped the ratification of international treaties in the U.S. Senate, has just released a DVD called World Events and Prophecy. His DVD explains how these and other major prophecies are being fulfilled today. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy. It's only $20 plus shipping and handling at discerningtoday.org or call toll-free 877-271-7639. Don't be caught off guard. Order your copy of World Events and Prophecy at discerningtoday.org.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Dr. Kevin Barrett. You can find his website at mujca.com. That website corresponds to the Muslim-Jewish-Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. And once again, you can find it at mujca.com. And I just wanted to mention before we get back into our conversation with Kevin that I'm going to be on Michael Collins Piper show tonight on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can tune that in at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time. Mike was on my show not too long ago and wanted me to come on his. So I will be on there tonight at 8 p.m. Central Standard Time to talk about whatever Michael Collins Piper deems to be important this evening. And I'm sure that Mike will have no shortage of things to cover. And I just hope that I can be a satisfactory guest. He's one of my favorite people, And, of course, I avail myself to the extent that I can of his books and articles, both at the American Free Press as well as the Barnes Review. And I've read several of Mike's books over the years, including his latest effort, The Judas Goats, and Final Judgment, the discussion of the Israeli Mossad's role in the assassination of John Kennedy. Someone here in San Antonio has been nice enough to give me some gratis copies of several of Mike's other works, which I plan on making my way through them in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, as time permits. Now back to Dr. Kevin Barrett. Kevin, again, we're talking about this whole scenario with Iran. If there is to be a war, this so-called neoconservative clash of civilizations between the United States and Britain and Israel on the one hand and Iran on the other, do you think that that disastrous development will eventually cause a much wider conflict between the United States and the other Islamic countries? And to what extent do you think the Israeli lobby has something to do with this development?
Well, it certainly is creating a clash with not just the Islamic countries, but the rest of the world. In a way, you know, Mark, it's the real struggle here is not so much between the neocons and the world of Islam as it is between the neocon control of the U.S. dollar and the U.S. military, since the neocons took over the Pentagon, versus Europe and the rising euro. As the dollar sinks and crashes, that's going to make it a lot harder to buy military hardware and have this huge aggressive military force to go out there and smash the Middle East to keep it safe for Israel. So that's they're kind of targeting the Europeans as much as anybody in this. You're right. They're setting up Iran. It is largely about destroying the Middle East to make it safe for Israel. And, you know, we have to be clear about this when we talk about this, because a lot of American Jews, you know, really bristle when you talk about the crimes of Zionism and AIPAC and so on, because they've been brainwashed, just like so many other Americans. You know, the only difference is it's easier to brainwash American Jews on these matters, you know, because there's a certain kind of ethnic solidarity. But that doesn't mean that ordinary American Jews are guilty of this. They're just, you know, poor brainwashed schmucks like everybody else. Once you're straight on that, and you realize that, in fact, you know, most American Jews generally vote, you know, are not particularly supportive of wars most of the time, you know, then you can go ahead and tell the truth about what's going on, which is that, indeed, these extremists like Kudnik, Zionists, have taken over our Pentagon. A Project for a New American Century and the neocon movement is about 80% Jewish, but these aren't ordinary Jews. These are extremist, fanatical followers of the demented guru Leo Strauss. That is, they are neocons, and they are
the old Leo Strauss is the old University of Chicago neocon.
That's right. Yeah, he was a Jewish refugee from Nazi Germany, but he was a disciple of Carl Schmitt, who was the Nazi court philosopher. And so Leo Strauss is basically a Jew who had to flee Nazi Germany after studying at the feet of the chief Nazi philosopher and absorbing his doctrines. And so Leo Strauss came over here, and he decided he absolutely hated American democracy because it reminded him of the Weimar Republic that preceded the rise of Nazism. So Leo Strauss became a cult leader, really, at the University of Chicago, and people like Wolfowitz and Pearl and these other neocons came and studied at his feet and have been hatching a long-term plan, to destroy American democracy since the 1960s. And some people have actually come out and talked about this. Stanley Hilton, who was the former chief aide to Senator Bob Dole, has described his days at the University of Chicago with these guys, and he says all they did was sit around planning the overthrow of American democracy, how to turn the U.S. into a presidential dictatorship through some new Pearl Harbor event. And, of course, that's exactly what they did on 9/11. The question is, will they finish off American democracy through this escalation of war in the Middle East and more false flag attacks, or will we nail them for war crimes first?
Do you believe that there is any hope that there could be a legitimate prosecution of any of these people for war crimes? And the context of my question should be seen against the backdrop of what clearly seems right now to be the neoconservative control of the Democratic Party as well. I mean, I I read the recent statements of Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Barack Obama on this whole question of Zionism and the state of Israel, on the whole question of Israel's position vis-a-vis the Palestinians, on the whole alleged possible need, as they describe it, for us to go to war with Iran. Aren't the Democrats pretty much a paper tiger in terms of effective opposition to the neoconservative policies in the Republican Party?
Unfortunately, they are. The Democrats are funded, about 60% of their money comes from Zionist sources, and the Republicans are only at about 35%, which is still enough to control the party. But the Democrats are almost completely dependent on Zionist money. And unfortunately, the Zionist money isn't coming from nice liberal Zionists and you know, peacenik Zionists like Rabbi Michael Lerner, a man who I have a lot of respect for, even though he's proud his son was in the IDF. He's a strong pro-Zionist. But he's
with
decent...
the Tikkun publication?
That's right. He's the editor of Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N, which is worth checking out. You know, he's even though he's pro-Zionist, he's a decent, reasonable, sophisticated, peace-loving human being. He just published a good 9/11 truth article by David Griffin in the current issue. But unfortunately, most of the money that's coming into the coffers of American politicians from extremely wealthy Zionists is coming from fascists. That is, you know, people who identify with the right wing of the Likud party in Israel and who want to wage war in the Middle East and use American power and American money and American blood to destroy the region on behalf of Israeli expansionism. And they're funding the Democrats even more than they're funding the Republicans, which means we can't look for help to that wing of the Democratic Party that's taking big money. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama are every bit as bad as George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Yes, and I think, you know, as I read the whole thing, come the 2008 presidential election cycle year situation, I would imagine that it's almost a 100% bet that whoever is sitting in the White House at that particular time subsequent to the 2008 elections is pretty much going to be yet another creation of AIPAC, or is that an overstatement?
Well, I sure hope not, but it could happen. You know, your earlier question was, how are we going to nail these people for war crimes? And I think the answer is that normally, you know, in most cases, only defeated parties get prosecuted for war crimes. After World War II, the Nazi war criminals were justly hanged for their crimes. And yet, the criminals behind the firebombings of Dresden and other German cities, which were completely useless militarily, they literally roasted alive hundreds of thousands of people for no military purpose whatsoever. The architects of that policy got away scot-free as heroes. Likewise, the people who bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki and created so much suffering, again, it had nothing to do with the war in Japan. It had to do with sending a message to the Soviet Union about the post-war situation. Those people are just as big war criminals as Hitler was. And yet they got away scot-free and are now looked to as heroes. You know, yeah. Truman is the buck stop here. So to nail these guys, we need to have them suffer a huge defeat. And, you know, I'm not saying we should go out and try and create that. I think they're creating it all by themselves. They're going to march this country into a doomed and unwinnable war, which will be lost. This country's economy will be trashed. We'll have something worse than the Great Depression. And at that point, hopefully in defeat, we can rise up and nail the war criminals rather than turn into an all-out fascist state, which is, of course, the other possibility.
Well, you know, listening to your remarks on the Second World War, I think it's noteworthy. You know, I've mentioned it on the air. My father's a retired Air Force colonel, and when he was a junior officer, at one time he briefly served as an aide to General Curtis LeMay, the father of the Strategic Air Command, of course, who was in charge of planning some of the most devastating raids on both Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan, including the famed torching of Tokyo on the 9th and 10th of March in 1945. And General LeMay, I guess, was ultimately directly in charge of supervising the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombings. And I remember seeing, before he died, seeing General LeMay on some public television show where they asked him this very question about the war crimes trials at Nuremberg and what the Nazis did or did not do at Nuremberg. And at that point, the questioner said, hey, had the tables been turned and had the Axis won the Second World War, would you not, General LeMay, be one of the people charged with war crimes from their perspective? And isn't there some legitimacy in that? And LeMay, surprisingly enough, said, yeah, he said, I can see that. He said, the winners get to write the rules. And I thought that was one of the most honest remarks I had ever heard anyone make at that level of command authority in regard to what we did in the Second World War. He basically said, hey, there is a double standard here. The winners got to write the rules. And therefore, to the extent that we were guilty against mass crimes against humanity for attacking massive numbers of civilians who, you know, without a real definable military purpose, we got away with that because, again, we controlled the legal process that was used to prosecute the situation after the war was over. The other thing that comes to mind, it seems to me, in regard to this whole situation, is that you have, I think, effectively said, Kevin, that the policies these neocons are pursuing are inherently contradictory. And I'm old enough to remember, of course, the last time that the United States became involved in a major war of counterinsurgency that ended up not working, and that was the tragic involvement in Southeast Asia. Do you think the contradictions in that policy in the 1960s and early 70s are mirrored by the contradictions in this present policy in the Middle East, and that because of that, the whole thing will fall apart under its own weight?
Yeah, I do. I think that counterinsurgency warfare is warfare against the whole population. And I guess that's what we're doing in Iraq right now, really. If you get down to reality and get out of the brainwashing machine that they're throwing at us in the major media, what's really going on is this is a war of aggression. It's an invasion and occupation of a country that didn't even threaten us, much less attack us. And it's a war against the people of that country who were virtually unanimous in their support for the resistance. Just as, you know, the French, actually, they're probably far more unanimous than the French were in supporting the French resistance against Nazi Germany. So we really are facing a heroic bunch of people over there in Iraq who are just not going to roll over and let their land be poisoned with depleted uranium and looted and occupied forever and destroyed and kept down. They've risen back a couple of times. That's the reason for this war, in fact, is that Iraq has been such a successful country at approaching European levels of education and technology and standard of living. And then every time that happens, you know, the first time the U.S. and Europe and Israel dragged them into pushed them into a war against Iran, illegal war of aggression against Iran, and the second time we smashed them down with Gulf War I, and even that wasn't enough to keep them down. They were rising again, and so this current war to just completely smash and annihilate that country was launched, and I think it's going to fail. The Iraqi people are united against this occupation, and this massive, you know, Shiite terror against Sunnis and Sunni terror against Shiites that you hear about, that's all bogus. I mean, or most of it. Most of it is occupation terror. You know, the U.S. and Zionist British agents are coming in there and strapping bombs to cars, and they blow them up, and then they call that a suicide attack. And the Iraqi people see right through this, and they're united against the occupation, and they are going to win. And that's why I think ultimately these neocons will be prosecuted for war crimes, because they will be seen as people who led us into the most horrendous defeat that this country has ever suffered.
Yes, and to me, as I look at it, I think it's going to be a twofold catastrophe. One is that I think the American public is increasingly, you know, and in this case, I do believe the corporate poll numbers are probably even worse than what corporate media is talking about in regard to the American public's perception that things have really gone south for the United States and Iraq. So that's one issue, of course, for the policy elites in this country to have to deal with, is to justify what clearly is unjustifiable in regard to the original rationale for the war, the fact that there was no congressional declaration of war, constitutionally speaking, that much as was the case with Lyndon Johnson and the whole circumstance of the Gulf of Tonkin resolution in the 1960s, that this weapons of mass destruction red herring with Saddam played a similar, if not identical, role in getting us to commit troops to the Middle Eastern theater, Central Asian theater. Now we're dealing with a situation, it seems to me, where as the disastrous character of this policy becomes more apparent to the average American, that if they take it to the next step, which would involve a preemptive strike against Iran, that this could well, if General William, Lieutenant General William Odom is correct, And he does not support a preemptive strike against Iran, but he says if it happens, they'll have to go in with boots on the ground. This would seem to presuppose the need for a return to military conscription in order to come up with the troop levels that would have to be involved in occupying a country of 70 million people. Would a reimposition of military conscription be the straw that breaks the camel's back in terms of the public throwing down the gauntlet and saying, hey, we are not going to go along with this? What do you think?
Well, yeah, I don't think people are going to accept the draft. In fact, I'm pretty sure they won't. All the poll numbers and, you know, the standard political wisdom is that there's just no way that people are going to accept that. Now, the scary thing about this, of course, is that, as you say, that this war on Iran seems to be an actual attempt to do an invasion, occupation, regime change, you know, the same mistake that they made in Iraq, only with a much bigger and stronger country. And to do that, they would obviously have to bring back the draft. And the only way to try to make the draft politically acceptable would be to use another 9/11 style event, perhaps even bigger than 9/11. If they really are going to go in there with troops, which is what it looks like, then I think we really do have to be ready for a nuclear attack on an American port sponsored by the same inside jobbers that brought us 9/11.
This is chilling stuff, my friend. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Dr. Kevin Barrett. You can call us at 1-800-313-9443. Stay tuned.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Your life demands long-lasting power for everything. If you want to find the best battery selection at the best prices, then BatteryStation.com is the place for you. Find common or hard-to-find batteries for practically everything, from computer backup units and camcorders to cell phones and wheelchairs. Go to BatteryStation.com for all your battery supply needs. At BatteryStation.com, you'll also discover high-tech LED tactical flashlights for every task, from trusted names like Surefire, Tektite, Gerber, Pelican, and more. BatteryStation.com offers lights featuring super bright, super tough, long-life LED technology. At BatteryStation.com, you'll find tough, crush-proof, waterproof, airtight, hard cases of all sizes from Pelican, Otter, and S3 Extreme. Visit them today, BatteryStation.com. It's all one word, BatteryStation.com. Or call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. Your source for batteries and accessories at very low prices. BatteryStation.com.
Thank you.
are the Anacostia America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Dr. Kevin Barrett of Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. You can find more information about that at mujca.com. And before I get back to my conversation with Kevin, I just wanted to alert him and also the listeners to the fact that there will be a series of pretty frequent commercial breaks in the next 10 minutes or so. And then there will be a longer period of time for conversation taking us up to 10 o'clock Central Standard Time. You can support the Republic Broadcasting Network by contacting us at republicbroadcasting.org and the World Wide Web, or giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's republicbroadcasting.org or at 1-800-724-2719. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling by, again, giving us a buzz at 1-800-724-2719 or contacting us on the Internet at www.republicbroadcasting.org. And as I have mentioned on several occasions in the initial portions of the show, RBN is in the process of getting their archives restored, as well as expanding their outreach on both the international shortwave as well as through conventional radio affiliates. Keep your eyes on all of these things in the days ahead, especially the fact that the archive restoral is just around the corner. And when that occurs, I'm going to be going into my archive shows and providing the most complete descriptions of these shows that I can possibly come up with, as well as links to the URLs and websites of the guests in question. That will be a very user-friendly thing in regard to being able to search either Mark Dankoff's America or any of the other RBN shows to find the specific topics and people that you would like to hear more about as far as delayed listening. So that's just around the corner, and when those things are back up online and fully operational, I will let you know. Kevin, looking at this whole scenario with Iran then, do you think if there is an American attack on Iran, that this whole process of the demonization of Muslims in the West will worsen? And what do you think it portends for those living in the United States and Britain, just to name two, who have some sort of a Middle Eastern background of one degree or another and have an affiliation with some branch of the Islamic religion? Will they be undergoing the same kind of thing that Japanese Americans endured at the hands of FDR? What do you think?
Well, that's always a possibility, Mark. It's not one I really like to think about too much. But the thing is that if they do go after Iran, they're going to need to try to get the support or at least the acquiescence of some of the other countries in the region, like Saudi Arabia and Egypt, which, of course, also are populated by Muslims. And it seems to me that if they were to do this sort of maximum false flag event and, like, nuke an American port and round up all the dissidents and shut down the Internet and round up all the Muslims, rounding up all the Muslims would not go over real well with the other Middle Eastern countries. So I hope they're smart enough not to try it.
We'll be back with Dr. Kevin Barrett. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. You can find Dr. Barrett's website at mujca.com. We'll return. Stay tuned.